Can you bring welcome everyone. I just started recording. We are very excited today with this special presentation. And I wanted just to let you know how great it is that you have such fabulous co-chairs in Michelle Welikoff and in Sarah Goodwin, Addis Goodwin. And they really think long and hard about what kinds of programming and what kinds of ideas you all need in order to do your job that much better. So I just wanted to give them a big shout out because they think long and hard and they think in advance. So you guys are lucky. So I'm not sure who's starting.
I'm starting. Great. So
thank you so much for all you do, you two.
Thank you, Lisa. So I just wanted to say that it's such a privilege that legacy is something that I've personally been thinking about, but also in San Diego, I remember hearing Rachel Davis present about legacy and was enamored with her since then and what she had to share and been kind of seeking out her knowledge more and more over the past 4 years. So was very excited when she offered to present it to everybody, and she is big into collaboration. So she invited Cindy Anapolsky, the director of philanthropy at Houston Jewish Community Foundation, to join her and present, and looking really forward to hear what they both have to say. So thank you both. Take the floor, Cindy. It's all you.
Great. It's nice to be here with you guys. Thank you, for Michelle. As she mentioned, my name is Cindy Anapolsky. I'm from the Houston Jewish Community Foundation. We are an independent Jewish community foundation here in Houston. We have about $240 million in assets that we hold, everything from donor advised funds, the Jewish organizations, endowments, as well as legacy plans, rollovers, things like that. So we kind of run the gamut. But the way I met Rachel was that we started the Life and Legacy program from the Grinspoon Foundation in Houston about 5 years ago. I was brought on to run the program, and Rachel and I just hit it off, and we have been working together ever since. And I should mention, she's done such a good job as the Chief Development Officer of JFS that she convinced me to be a legacy donor to JFS here in Houston. So I am not only your speaker, but I am also someone who is deeply committed to the work of what you guys do. Today, we're going to sit and talk a little bit about best practices in legacy giving and everything you need to think about, but not just best practices, but beyond best practices. So we're going to talk about what brings your program from an A to an A+. And with that, we're going to start with a poll. Lisa,
okay.
Let's see how it goes.
Here we go.
So the percentage of your annual operating budget from your endowment, you're going to want to take your endowment income and divide that by your total income for your organization. So if everyone wants to answer, then we'll take a quick look and see where we all are. And hopefully Lisa can show us the results.
Absolutely. 23 of 34 have voted. So I just wanted to wait up to 30 if people are still doing it, unless you're ready to.
Let's go. We'll move.
We'll
That's
move
enough.
I'm going to end the polling now.
Okay.
And share results.
Wow, you guys. Okay. So 56% between 1% and 4%. And then we have another 25%, about under 10%. So there's room for improvement, I think we can all agree. One of the things I wanted to make sure you guys were aware of is that in general, philanthropic advisors say if 20% of your operating budget is not coming from your endowment by 2025 or so, then you might be in fiscal trouble. So you really need to make the time now to grow your endowment base. With that, I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to Rachel. If you guys have questions, you can put them in the chat for us.
Okay, Lisa, we need our slides. Okay. Oh, you know what? I'm not sure I'm seeing them. There we go. Okay, you need to move up to the top of the deck. This is in the middle of the presentation. You all get to see what you've got coming. So while she's doing that, I want to introduce to you someone else who's visiting today. She often comes to this meeting. Her name is Lene Novominski. She's a member of our team in Houston, and she is the head of corporate and community relations. And today I'm going to be talking about infusing culture across your agency. And we are so lucky to have Lene on our team because not only has she been with JFS for 10 years, but before that, she worked for the Houston Jewish Community Foundation. So she
understands. Small world around here.
It's a small world in Houston. There's only 400 donors. No, I'm kidding. There are a lot more, but it seems like it's a small world. But having Lene as a key piece on our team really helps to have someone, even though she's in corporate relations, understand about that we're always thinking about legacy. Next slide, please. So the one thing I want to talk to you about is how do you change culture in an agency? All of our agencies in the last 10 to 20 years, I remember when all of a sudden it was all about outcomes and measurements and best practices. And we knew at our agency, as we assume you did, is that you really needed to have everyone from the receptionist to the chief clinical officer to understand what outcomes are and what you measure and what logic models were and what your impact goals were, and that this was important to spread across your agency to become a best practice agency. Well, we want to propose to you today that the same is true about legacy giving, that it's that essential that your receptionist, your CFO, your CEO, your board members, your staff members, everybody has to understand why legacy plays such an important role in the health of your organization. So we started our main legacy efforts in 2011 when it was our 100th anniversary. And we worked really hard to try to raise 100 funds for our future. We didn't get to 100, but we got a good start. And I estimate that we still have out about $7 million in commitments from that particular initiative. Some of them have funded. Some people have passed away since then. And then in 2015, we joined the Grinspoon program that in Houston was being run by our Houston Jewish Community Foundation. And that you'll hear a little bit more about today because some of the lessons and attitudes we learned from that have really helped us create our culture more. Now, certainly you want to do your best practices. We're all very busy with our trying to figure out virtual fundraising and our events and our end of year campaigns and how to raise money for COVID assistance and what's happening with federal grants and all of that. But the one thing that I learned about legacy is that it's a marathon and not a sprint. And while there are time limited initiatives within legacy, most of the time it's just constantly continuing that marathon. So you always want to have your annual calendar and your stewardship plan and all of that. Every Thursday I have on my calendar to send some information to the head of our foundation, some kind of report that holds our endowment. So on Tuesday I get a reminder about that. And that reminds me I better pick up the phone and do something with either my leadership or a potential legacy gift. So that will be one of the takeaways we hope you take away from today is just in best practices, what that marathon should be looking like. Next slide. I want to talk a little bit about how we've taken it a bit beyond. So we have started something called a family to family program. And this happened when COVID started and we could no longer bring people on tours of the agency. One of the things we have at JFS in Houston is an on-site supportive and transitional employment program for adults.
It's fine. I have my headphones on. It's fine.
Which is open to the public and therefore wonderful to bring people on tours and get them to know the agency. So we wanted something since that went away. And we started thinking, well, you know, people are now used to talking to their family members on Zoom. And we would ask parents to bring their adult kids on these tours. And it was never possible. They were out of town or not available, but now everybody's talking by Zoom. So I want to give you an illustration of what we're doing. So this is the Kaplan Mintz family, and the couple we started with there are Jay and Carolyn. And the first thing I did is get Carolyn to agree to do this. They are legacy donors to us. And I called her up and I have a series of questions that I asked her about her family. And then I asked her her agenda, what would she like to get out of the call? And what she mainly wanted is that her three adult children, one in LA, one in Seattle, and one in Austin, should get involved in the Jewish communities where they live. That was her goal. The two mothers, the mother and mother-in-law, are donors to JFS. So we pre-prepared them to be a part of the meeting as well. So we got on the call and it was an hour long. And the first 20 minutes was really getting to know the kids. We always get these Hanukkah cards with the kids, but we didn't know them. And we learned about what they do in business and community, what they care about, a little bit about the relationships. We met their pets and so forth. And then our CEO, Linda Berger, many of you know her and see her in the corner, did a little presentation about JFS. It was about 15, 20 minutes long, and it was geared towards the interest that I had learned about before in my conversation with Carolyn. Then we had the grandmothers each talk about what has meant the most to them in their lives in terms of philanthropy. And it was just a nice moment for the kids to hear out loud something about what has been the most meaningful to the grandparents. And then at the end, Carolyn said, kids, I want you to know we've left a gift in our will to JFS, and I wanted you to see why and why it's important to us. The follow-up has been that, of course, we got back to Carolyn and Jay and the mother and mother-in-law, but we now have a relationship with the children. Two have agreed to be on our mailing list. We're sending them business contacts and connecting them with organizations in the cities where they live. And we have a little bit of a light engagement with them, and that's what we want. So obviously for a program like that, we're going for our declared legacy donors, our top donors, people who've given continual gifts for 20 years. It doesn't have to be a lot. And then of course, we're focusing right now on the 55 to 70 year old age, because this is the group during COVID that is really all looking at their estate plans again. Next slide, please.
Okay, so our next thing we wanted to talk with you about was leadership. You can see all these very happy people over here from our legacy celebration in Houston, because they've all been very successful in getting legacy gifts for different organizations. This is about 16 different organizations you're seeing pictured here, and they're team leaders. So let's talk about team leaders. So Rachel is the team leader for Jewish Family Service, and she helps facilitate all of the legacy giving, obviously, for JFS. But it's not enough that Rachel does it, and it's not enough that any of you guys do it. You really need to get best practice. You need to get your CEO on board. You need to get your board members on board. Ideally, every board meeting, you want to have a legacy update. Not only that, but every board meeting, you want to make sure that every board member has signed a legacy commitment to you. Because really, these are the people that love your organization and want to see it succeed long term. So I suggest you start with them. They should be the low-hanging fruit. In addition to Rachel, I want to mention that she has a great, great team of people. And I think it's really important to get volunteers from the community to help, because they have the connections and they'll be able to help you with this effort. Next slide, Lisa. So one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is I think it's really important to learn from others. And one of the successful teams that we had a chance to work with here in Houston was the Holocaust Museum. And Rachel asked me to share a few things about why I thought their team was so special. And let me kind of just go through that with you. First of all, the team. Like I said, you have a great leader, but the leader needs a great team. Here's who I suggest. Past presidents. Past presidents are people who love, love, love your organization. They're not interested in being president anymore, but they still want to make sure that your organization succeeds long term. And you know they're capable, so let's let them get involved, right? The next thing, long-term donors. You can have people who've been giving to you 10, 20, 30 years. They may not be the biggest donors, but they love you and they love JFS. And those are people who not only will give a legacy gift themselves, but will be anxious and eager to talk to their friends and their family about giving legacy gifts as well. And finally, along the same terms as longtime donors is volunteers, people who actually spend the time. So for example, the Holocaust Museum has docents, and we had several docents on the team. And it was very helpful because the docents were able to talk about the programs that are going on and why you want these programs to succeed long-term and why we need endowments to make sure that these are long-term successes for the museum. Or in your case, all the different wonderful programs that you guys do, you wanna make sure someone can explain why you wanna have these continue on long-term. The next thing Rachel mentioned, and I think this is great, she puts it on her calendar to remind herself to do something every week, right? Well, we all need reminders like that. So when you guys get your teams together, you need to make sure you have a monthly meeting and put it on everyone's calendar and make everyone accountable to each other. Because the trick of this is people are going to see the date coming up on the calendar. They're going to know they have a meeting with the development staff, and they know they're going to have a meeting with the other people on the team, and they're going to want to have something to report. So highly recommend, really, really key, making sure everyone's working together and going the same direction. And I just also want to mention that one of the things about working with all these volunteers is they're fantastic. What they're not so great about, they're passionate about the organization, but they might not know how to do all the details. So once that person brings in the legacy prospects and has people excited about it, I really recommend that you pass along that person to the professional at your organization and let them do all the paperwork and let them do all the technical stuff. And I think we're ready for the next slide.
So the next leg of the what holds up legacy is stewardship. And what we always say about stewardship for legacy gifts is that you're going to be doing it for a long time, a long, long time. As a matter of fact, we joke that if you give a gift in your will to JFS Houston, you are going to live to 120 years.
And I just want to throw in a little statistic here, because I love statistics. We recently heard about a study in Australia. No joke, this is true. People live on the average 5 to 7 years longer once they've made a bequest to a charity in their estate plans.
There you have it. There you have it. You don't even have to exercise as much anymore. So of course, your best practices are going to be that you want to put systems in place for birthday cards and updates, and at your legacy events, you're going to have some special legacy events every year. You want to do it in a way that is systematized, because so right now I know all of our legacy donors. So when someone has an illness or a child gets married, of course I'm doing it very personalized, but someday I won't be there, and they may still be there. And so you want to make sure that the person after you is remembering to wish them a happy birthday and so forth. So you're putting these in systems. And of course your recognition system, some of you have seen our recognition book and there's a page from it. If you have pre-funded funds, which means someone has made a legacy or endowment gift that is in their lifetime, then a really good practice is to send them an annual report. You can see an example of one below where you've got when was your fund established, with how much money, what is it worth now, and what is the distribution this year? And then, of course, narratives on what that was used for. And these are really important things to have. People really get excited to see their endowments grow. Next slide, please. So taking that a little bit further, we believe in reaching out to the children of people who are involved. When I will say, you know, basically that it's a healthy family. You have to be a little bit careful, because not all families are intergenerationally functioning that well. So you do want to watch it. So first of all, as I mentioned, for pre-funded gifts or people who are still living, you want to have that kind of engagement, whether regular reports. I'll give you an example. We have a fund for professional development. And whenever we use that fund, I will call up the funder and say, today we had an expert in on suicide in the military, and he came and gave a talk to our clinicians at CEU credits. And that was funded by your fund, and it was really very, very well received. And so those kinds of engagements. If someone has made an estate gift, you might encourage them to share that information with their family. You want it to be a happy thing when it happens. Now, obviously, estate gifts are triggered at a sad time, but it's usually a very meaningful time. So we had a donor in the last couple of years leave $100,000 for us. The children had been made aware of it, and the choice of the fund was decided as a family. It was going to go to our disability program. So we keep in touch with the two children regularly now that the mom is gone about things in the disability program. And of course, we are comfortable saying to most families, you know, when you're alive, you can do a mitzvah. In the world to come, you can't do a mitzvah, so that the mitzvahs done in this world are a merit to the meaning of your life. And so, when we're doing these things in this program, your mother's gift continues to be a merit to her life. And it really creates a very warm feeling for the children. I want to recommend one other thing, which is to think of legacy not just as formal endowments. We have gone in the last number of years from $50,000 a year about in our in memorial gifts and tribute gifts to close to $200,000 a year. Now, they're not in endowments, but they are people who are giving $100 a month in memory of their mother, for instance. There are people when they pass away who are designating our charity. So recently we had a past president pass away. We had in many years ago on our 95th anniversary honored our past presidents. And we had contacted all 44 of the family members and gotten to know them had something to do with them. And so I called the adult daughter of this past president, hadn't really talked to her in 7 years, but I was able to share with her in what ways the agency meant a lot to the father. Now, I can assure you, they had actually chosen JFS for designating charities when he passed away. And I can assure you that on future yard sites and other things that the daughter will be making a gift to us in her father's memory. And it won't be too long before I go to her and say, you might consider leaving a gift in your father's memory in your will so that the continuing mitzvahs that he has done will continue even after you're gone. And so I obviously wouldn't use after you're gone. We never use that in legacy. The other kinds of touches that we have with family members almost always are a very, very positive thing. And you can believe that the person who gives $100 a month, which really could be endowed for about $25,000, he is someone who we want to ask. So we're doing a new website now. This shows you how we bring things across the culture. So we're doing a photo shoot this week for the website, people holding up our tagline on a sign. So I identified 4 people I want to be asking for legacy groups to be in the photo shoot because I want them to have that warm touch that they are very important to us as a family before that happens. So that's how we weave it in. Next slide.
Okay, I'm going to talk to us from the perspective of community. I will be honest with you guys. When we started the Life and Legacy program here in Houston, people were very skeptical. In fact, I heard a lot of comments about people that they were going to steal other people's donors, and why should they share donor lists, and why should we all work together in the community? And what we very easily and clearly found out, and very quickly, by the way, is that legacy gifts don't work that way. Legacy gifts work because people love the organization. It's not like handing $1,000 or $100 out of your pocket. This is something that really means something to them and something that comes from their heart. So as it turned out, no one needed to worry about stealing anything because the people who love JFS will give a legacy gift to JFS. And I should mention that actually, interestingly enough, with our Life and Legacy program, over 60% of the legacy commitments that JFS got through our program, people had given to JFS as one of 2 or one of 3 organizations. So they might give to their synagogue, but they're also giving to JFS. They might give to the JCC, but they're also giving to JFS. So I thought that was statistically pretty interesting to hear that people understand and acknowledge that JFS is an important part of the community long-term. Now, I should also mention the nice thing about working together as a community is that donors appreciate it, right? They're not having to set up appointments with numerous professionals around the community. They're not filling out a lot of paperwork. It's very easy to them and very simple. And I think that's the way we want to present legacy to our donors, is that we make it as simple as possible and as easy as possible to meet their needs. I also just want to point out one more thing. I don't know how many of you listened to the GA over the last couple of days, but I know I did sit on a few sessions, and legacy is a huge topic. So not just here with you guys, but the federation systems all over the country, everyone's looking at the concept of legacy, and everyone wants to make sure that they are talking to their donors now. Okay, Rachel, next slide.
Mm-hmm. So even if many of you are Grinspoon communities, but even if you're not, you can foster a community culture of legacy. So let me just give you an example of how you can do that. So anytime we see that someone has funded someone, someone funded a new program at the University of Houston Business School, someone did a big building naming of a synagogue. So we're in touch with them, or I have our CEO in touch with them, or our president, depending on who. And first of all, we're congratulating them. And then we're saying to them, you know, we're highlighting how we work with that organization. So for that synagogue, we may say, I'm so glad that they're going to be expanding Bris Shalom because, you know, Bris Shalom is one of the most active synagogues that we work with. The rabbi is so good about recognizing when families need some psychological counseling, and he sends them over to us. We actually share families sometimes on financial aid for his discretionary fund. And Bris Shalom is the best partner with us. And so the fact that Bris Shalom is going to be there a long time and growing is not only good for the people who go to Bris Shalom, but it's good for JFS too. So I just want to let you know that. Someone, if they make a gift to the University of Houston, we might reach out and congratulate them on that and say, you know, we have a very close relationship with the University of Houston's Graduate School of Social Work. We're a top placement area for them for clinical internships. And I'm thrilled to see what you've done. So first of all, that's what we do. The second is we encourage legacy gifts for other causes. Let's say I'm talking to Joe Williams, and I say to Joe, Joe, I noticed that this week's speaker for the 100 Men Club at Beth Yeshurun is so interesting. I see you're chairing that program again. How many years have you been doing that? 12. I said, you know, Joe, I don't work for Beth Yeshurun, but you have put such a stamp on that program and it's so important. I encourage you to go to the synagogue and think about leaving a gift in your will and creating a legacy gift for that program because your name is so associated with it. And we'll talk a little bit about it. And I may even end the conversation, if it's positive, with saying, you know, I talked to Andy over at Beth Yeshurun a lot. Are you comfortable with me mentioning to him that we had this conversation? And I would often get a yes. Now, I am sure to say, listen, Joe, it's funny that I'm talking to you about leaving a gift for Beth Yeshurun. Of course, when you make your plans about saying what's been the most meaningful thing to you with charitable gifts in your legacy, I hope that JFS is among your top three because I know you're such a wonderful, kind, caring person, et cetera, et cetera. So we really are celebrating anytime anybody does a legacy gift. So let me tell you how that can pave the way for legacy gifts for you. So there is a family here who funded a new entrepreneurship program at our university in Houston. And they had made a major recent addition to their gift. I called up the woman who's a donor to JFS and congratulated her on it. And I said, you know, we would like to get involved with the program because our disability program is an entrepreneurship model. So she put us in touch with the dean. The dean came over. We ended up with an intern here. After the first year of the intern, I went back to the person and said, you know, I know you gave $10 million to the university. It's amazing. The intern was fabulous. What would you think about giving $100,000 into an endowment so that every year we could have an internship from the school? And that place where you and Melvin meet, which is your interest in entrepreneurship and your love for JFS, could be endowed. And we got the endowment, and now we have an intern every year from the program. So that's the kind of community culture that you can encourage. The next slide and the last slide. And so we're going to leave you with something sweet. So first of all, you never want to have a presentation without a takeaway. There's one practical and one sort of light a fire under you. The practical one is do something every week for legacy. That's the way you build it. The second is, of course, the main theme today is infuse legacy through every part of your agency. This morning, I was at a call with our chief clinical officer, our C-suite, and I was talking about this to the team, and our CEO said to the chief clinical officer, do you know what a legacy gift is? And embarrassingly, she didn't. So, you know, do as I say and not as I do. But of course, she did by the end of the meeting. So infusing it across your culture is important. And then keep your eyes open all the time for individuals who may be naturally inclined to think legacy and act on it. And with that, we have a final little poll that Cindy will walk you through.
Okay, we're going to pull up our last poll as something fun to end the discussion with. Something you haven't thought about before, I bet. What percentage of people who make provisions in their will for their pet also make bequests? So these are good legacy prospects for you guys. Let's see what you guys think. Are pet lovers the kind of people who give gifts or not? Okay, are we ready with the results?
We can't hear you, Lisa. You're muted.
You ready? 25 out of 30, 27 have voted. Okay, we'll ask.
Okay, let's see what we got. Okay, so y'all did pretty good, I can say. So the 43% of you who said it was 55% are correct. It's a huge, huge number of people who pet owners just love to give charitable bequests. So you guys just need to keep that in mind when you're thinking about your donors. And we just wanted to leave you guys with a little bit of a fun note. Dog lovers are great people. And it was a pleasure for Rachel and I to be here today. I think we're going to hand it back over to
Sarah.
Michelle to talk about some practices.
Thank you so much, Cindy and Rachel. That was a great presentation. I think we have a fair amount of time, and what we want to do is open up to all of you, people who are willing to share some of your best practices and legacy that you provide to the community through your agencies, or pose any questions that you may have to either Cindy or Rachel for the remaining time that we have. Does anybody want to go first? Any challenges you have? Any?
Happy to go.
Yeah.
I actually have a stash of a lot of my marketing stuff right at my fingertips, and I didn't even think about it till just now when you asked, but we started
you can
putting
share
together
your screen if you want to, Amy. I'm sorry. If you want to
so I have it in my hand. When I first joined JFS in summer of 2018, donors who had named funds were already getting impact reports, but they were getting just like a one-page sheet that kind of told a few stories of people that their fund had helped. And I said, I think we can take it up a notch. So what we're creating are these little booklets with our logo on the bottom, the name of the fund, and the year of the report. And so what we do is we put together these books. My marketing team selects like a good photo to use. We talk a little bit about what we do in that service area at JFS. I'm in Detroit. How many people work on the team to help clients in that area? And so we talk a little bit about the kinds of work that we do and how we're the quarterback for families in crisis, so on and et cetera. And then we tell stories of the types of people that your dollars went to help this year. And these are real stories. Names are probably changed to protect the clients always. And then at the very end, where applicable, we may not do this for every single one of them. They may look a little different depending on what the fund is, but we will give the date that the fund was used, what it was used for, and the amount that was spent from the fund so that they can see their impact in that year in a snapshot. So we started sending these to the fund holders, and if there was somebody else associated with the fund, they received it as well. And we received really positive feedback. The only negative feedback we received was someone said, don't spend your money putting these together. They're too nice. And we said, this was like $1.50. At the end of the day, this cost us nothing. But they thought it was so nice, which was nice for us that they thought we had spent so much money on it. So that's one thing that we do for our fund holders at JFS.
Amy, this is Kelly Weider. I'm new to this forum. I'm the new Chief Development Officer for Albert Jewish Family Service in West Palm Beach. So it's such an honor to be part of this group, and I'm learning so much. Rachel and Cindy, terrific. Amy, I just wanted to say, I love that report you just shared. Is it possible that you have that in the form of a PDF that, or some other format that you could send to the group? Because here in, you know, I've only been on the job about 7, maybe 8 weeks, but I'm seeing that the life and legacy has always been kind of shoehorned. It's been on the side of the desk for the very reasons Rachel and Cindy discussed. There's just that race to the annual campaign and meeting the goals and the events and promoting the work of the agency, but carving out the time for life and legacy, it just seems like it's something that has just, as I said, been done on the side of the desk. And I'm trying to raise awareness amongst not only the staff, of course, but the CEO and the board. I think they understand it's important, but actually dedicating time and resources to it. So providing the statistic about 2025, I think that's very helpful, that 20% of the budget should be covered by endowments. That is definitely going to resonate with folks here. So thank you.
That's wonderful. Does anybody else have anything?
Do you have, this is Deborah Peoples in Rockville, Maryland with Jewish Social Service Agency. Do you have minimum amounts to established name funds and a set of policies and procedures? Like for instance, Amy, would you do the same amount of reporting for a $25,000 fund as for a $100,000 and $250,000 fund? So I'm curious about that.
So we do have different entry levels for different things that we do, but typically to open a named fund at JFS is $10,000. And then we ask donors to annually at least give a minimum of $1,000. So these reports that we are doing currently for these people are named fund holders. And in some cases, positions that are endowed at the agency by an endowment that's held at our federation. And we're working on creating them for named fund holders who are, I would say, not giving at the same level, but also still deserve to be interacted with and engaged in a meaningful way. And we're looking at doing something for them as well.
So if I could answer that, Deborah, our policy is a little bit different. We do named funds. Our goal is to have someone do a named fund for $100,000. If they do $100,000, then it's in perpetuity. If it's less than $100,000, at $50,000 or less, then we reserve the right to meld it with a cause as things evolve. We have guidelines and not rules. Meaning, we have someone who said, well, I want to give you $87,000 in memory of my parents, but I'm going to get it to $100,000 over the next 10 years. Fine, go, you know. And so we tend to do reports for anyone in the approximately $50,000 and higher, but it depends on what's lower and who the family is. So guidelines, not rules, but guidelines.
Wendy, you had something.
Hi there, Wendy Wilsker. I'm the Chief Advancement Officer in Boston. A couple of things that we have done over the past few years. So as Rachel said, I mean, planned giving is like a triathlon. And we really incorporate planned giving into our major gift conversations with our major donors. One of the things that, you know, everyone is looking at are donors who give from their donor advised funds. And over the past couple of years, we've been asking those donors if they have named a beneficiary of their donor advised fund and would they consider naming JFNCS as one of the beneficiaries. It is super, super easy. And that has been a really great strategy. So we're trying to really blend, you know, our outright asks and our legacy asks. A couple of other things that we've done a few years ago, we branded our legacy society. We called it the Tree of Life Society. For Rosh Hashanah last year, we sent out little honey sticks that had like a little card, like super inexpensive honey sticks were donated. We had hoped to do a little reception this year. Mm-hmm. Probably that will be virtual. And then the other thing is that in every one of our newsletters, we have a page that's devoted to our Tree of Life Society, and we highlight our donors. And we've really tried to ensure that we are highlighting younger legacy donors, and also people who are not necessarily major donors. We have found volunteers are also, as Rachel and Cindy mentioned, phenomenal prospects, and have also talked about one gentleman has included us as the beneficiary of a real estate property. And so really shared that so that we can be giving examples of how easy it is. But I really just want to kind of, you know, share just the whole donor advised fund beneficiary. It was actually suggested to me by my colleague at the Boston Federation, who runs their donor advised fund program. Many of our donors have their advised funds with Combined Jewish Philanthropies, and it's been a very easy strategy for us.
And I happen to know that a number of the donors who signed up for our 100 funds initiative have left us $100,000 or $200,000 from their donor advised fund when they pass. And this new gift that we just got, which was a $2 million gift, is being funded over 7 years from a donor advised fund. So,
and I should mention, yeah, I agree with Rachel. We, with all of our donor advised funds, we do encourage people to consider either having a successor or to go ahead and leave the remainder as a legacy gift. So people have donor advised funds all over the place though. So to the extent that you know of those people, then you should definitely have the conversation with them.
Terrific, thank you, Wendy. Does anybody have any other best practices that they wanna share from their agencies? We have about 10 more minutes to be able to discuss what people do. And I also wanna, before someone goes next or raises their hand, I wanna ask if maybe somebody has, for my sake, I would love this, collateral with wording that they've put together that they found is very easy and clear for people who want to sign off on and make a commitment for a legacy gift. Is there something that we could maybe share by replying to the affinity group email, and we can put it on the network's website? That would be great.
Are you asking for letters that people have, or what are you asking for?
Like a contract of getting in writing that they're willing to set up.
Like an intention?
An intention, yeah.
Okay.
I would love something like that because we don't have a program in place yet, and I would love to see what people put together, what's important to have, because from my perspective, we had a planned giving appeal and program put together before I even got here, and I've been here 6 years now at JCS, and it's so easy to get people, especially board members, to agree to putting in their will. But how do you get that sign off, that commitment where you know that they have it, versus a year from now they may change their mind, or they may say that they have, but we have no way of
keep holding them accountable.
Yeah, holding them accountable. So I would love if somebody's willing to share, whether it's Amy, whether it's Wendy or anybody else, or even just to discuss it as the next topic.
And yep. Sarah, I'm more than happy to share. We have a community, what we call letter of intent. That's all. We have a two-step process here that we follow, that all of the Life and Legacy communities follow, basically. The first step is just getting the person to make a non-legal, non-binding commitment that they would like to do this. And then we come back to them 6 months or a year later, and then we start getting into the paperwork. Because, and let me tell you, the paperwork has definitely been the hardest part of this whole process, because you really, everyone has great intentions, but until it's written down and until they change their, you know, IRA beneficiary, until they meet with their lawyer, it's just not gonna happen, right? So I think the follow-up is really, really critical.
So there is a very formal part of formalization that we learned from working with Cindy. One thing that we do, and you can tell I'm not shy about anything, but first of all, in every single fundraising piece that we have a paragraph about if you would like to leave a gift. And we have the tax number because our tax number for our foundation is different than our JFS. But when I'm talking to someone about a legacy gift in general, I'll say, you know, I'm going to take the liberty of sending you the basic information that should you decide to go forward that you would share with your advisor. And I'll just send it to you and you can always forward it on to them if you intend to do this and just say, next time we meet, remind me that I want to do this. And that sometimes just that simple little thing can help move that formalization along.
You send that via email, Rachel?
Uh-huh.
Do you want to send that to us as a
Sure, I can send you the little paragraph.
That'd be great. And that goes on any one of your
on our all of our donor envelopes and everything. We put something in there if you would like to continue the work of JFS in the future. Here's some language you can use. And here's the tax number.
Terrific. That'd be great.
So. Is there also other marketing materials that people could share about when they go out? You know, just to see other people's ideas is always.
Absolutely.
Sure. We just ran a campaign at Rosh Hashanah. We called it May You Be Written in the Book of Life and Legacy. And we were particularly pushing. We have a matching gift, legacy gift. A family is, it's a multi-million dollar matching gift. And so we've raised about $1,300,000 in matches so far, and we have a ways to go, but that's what we actually promoted in this life and legacy advertising over the holidays. Mm-hmm.
I feel like we have time for one more question or topic if anybody wants to say anything before we close up.
I have one. Go ahead, Lisa.
Well, it's about the conference coming up. Did you want to say something about this that we were just talking about?
Well, just very quickly, I want to remind people about prospects, that you really want to bring people onto the border, good prospects. And there's a whole new category that people are paying attention to. And that's young women who have decided that being single and mature is just wonderful and fine. And and they're successful professionals, and pay attention to them and get them involved in your agency because they're among the best prospects you have for legacy gifts.
Interesting. Good little tip. Thank you, Rachel and Cindy. I'm sure that Sarah's going to end this, but I wanted to mention that we're having our virtual conference. You're going to be getting information about that. It's taking place April 20th to the 23rd. And we are sending out an RFP for both the traditional presentation, as well as we're doing a program showcase for 8 of our affinity groups. So the development services professionals will have their own program showcase. So what a program showcase is 5 minutes, 5 slides. And you talk about, let's say Rachel might want to show us that Book of Life and Legacy Rosh Hashanah program. And these are programs that other agencies can say, oh, I think I could do that, you know, in my agency. So I want to encourage all of you, because we are doing a development professional services affinity group, to think about programs you have and apply for submit the RFP for that. And we also have the sessions in this, we're gonna have around 15, I think, sessions, and we definitely want development sessions, and that especially, of course, during the time of COVID and what people are doing. But, you know, the conference will be as good as all of our submissions will be. And I want to encourage you all, because I know you have great programs and services and ideas, and to submit something. I think we're giving everyone around 5 weeks. And we're doing this conference, which is very different. Of course, everything is different because it's virtual. It's going to be a lot of opportunity for networking and fun activities, as well as sessions, program showcases, and of course, we're gonna have sponsors. And I think it's gonna be great. So I encourage all of you to attend. Oh, and it's going to be relatively inexpensive. That's right. That was the big thing. We're giving agencies, they can bring up to 10 people, or 10 people is this much and another 5 people is that much. And it's going to be a lot less than what it was originally, because no one's going anywhere. They're not flying. They're not staying. And we want to have participation from as many people as we can throughout the network. And I'm plugging it because I hope you all come and submit. So there you go.
Based on the Minneapolis weather, it's probably good.
Oh, I know. But 2022 Minneapolis.
Snow at 20 degrees, so God knows what's going to happen in April or whatever.
No, yeah. Dana, we are coming in 2022.
I heard that. We'll have good weather then, I promise.
When are we going to Dallas? What happened to Dallas?
Dallas, we couldn't get back to. We had to give up Dallas because, there was a lot of financial issues around that. And Dallas gave us the money back. Minneapolis wouldn't. So there you go.
Let's get through COVID first. Let's get through the election next week.
Amen.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Amen.
I encourage everybody to vote. I just want to thank Cindy, thank Lisa, thank Michelle, my co-chair, to thank everybody that has joined us. Rachel, of course, for presenting today with Cindy. And
happy birthday, Sarah.
Thanks.
Happy birthday, Sarah.
Happy birthday.
Everybody for joining us today. I want to remind everyone, November 24th, not the 17th, days before Thanksgiving, is our next session. We will send out all of the information that's needed before, and a reminder and a link. And Deborah wanted to know how to access the development resource in the network's website, and we will remind everybody of that as well. I think, Lisa, you recently sent it out in the email right before the link came to everyone, but we'll send that out again to everybody. Or if you want to add it to the chat before we say goodbye for Deborah and anybody else, just so that we can access the resources there, which are wonderful. So thank you, everybody. Michelle.
Lisa, do you want to send out the link for the Development of Resource Center, or you'll send an email?
It can go in the email. It can go here, whatever.
I can tell you all right now how to do it. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Okay, you guys, it's so easy. You go to the members only section of our website, networkjhsa.org. It's on the top right. You click that. Then you go to member benefits, the other one. There's two things. You want to go to whatever it is when you see that. I can't remember exactly what it says. And you click on that, and then you click on resource library. You always click on resource library. Don't get confused by affinity groups. Once you get into the resource library, you click on search by affinity group, right? That's what you guys are. Or search by webinar. Let's say you want to hear a webinar that we had a while ago. You can search from webinars too. Then when you search by affinity group, let's say you see something that says filter and all the affinity groups are listed, you would go to development and then you'd see everything there. We are getting a new resource library, which is going to be really great and a lot more easy to understand, but everything anyone submitted is in the development section of our resource library. The password is the same for everybody. It's network, right? Capital N, network. And the that's not the password. The username is network and the password is capital NJHSA18. I'll send it to you, but always keep it because it doesn't change. Okay, so keep it somewhere. I'll send it right now. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Nice to see everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being so
happy
patient.
Birthday, Sarah.